Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
It's December. It's the holiday season. It's the time of year you've been waiting for all year for your e-commerce business. And you're doing awesome, except you're being crushed under the volumes. And you kind of feel like you're in over your head. Well, you wouldn't be if you were using Whiplash, modern fulfillment that is built to scale. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, exclusively, you can get $100 credit by signing up today. Go right now and check it out. GetWhiplash.com/hack. That's GetWhiplash.com/hack. Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest is a leader, golf addict, and an entrepreneur. He is currently the co-founder of the Athlete Activation System, which provides strength coaches and personal trainers with the system that they can use to become more effective as trainers. He's also the co-founder of WP Up, a service to proactively manage, secure, and support your WordPress website. Now, let's hack Jeremy Choi. All right, before we get into the interview today, I want to just take a moment and thank today's sponsor, Whiplash, modern fulfillment built to ship. You're running an e-commerce business, and Whiplash is your virtual warehouse. You send your products to a Whiplash facility, and when your customers order, Whiplash ships it to them, just like you would, but faster and cheaper. They have warehouse facilities in Detroit, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and London, England. Whiplash will get your products to your customers faster, no matter where they live in the world. Plus, Whiplash connects easily with major shopping carts like Shopify, Magento, and Bandcamp, so you can get up and running faster and easier. Remember, if you're being crushed under holiday volumes, this should be a time to celebrate, not to feel like you're in over your head. And you wouldn't be if you were using Whiplash. Contact Whiplash now so this goes down in history as the last holiday season that you shipped for yourself. Don't get stressed out. Get Whiplash. Go to getwhiplash.com/hack right now. And exclusively for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you are going to get $100 credit for getting started today. That's getwhiplash.com/hack. We're back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest, Jeremy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, John.
Thanks for coming. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Even though we're just down the street from each other, it's great to connect here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let's jump into this, Jeremy. Jeremy, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would say leadership, transitioning from what I call kind of hero to a coach. I guess to further kind of illustrate that, what I've done in the past is that I've always been the one, as starting off as an entrepreneur, I've always been kind of the technician or the worker. So before I started my creative agency, I was always the designer. Before I started the magazine, I was always a writer / photographer / creative person. So I've always kind of jumped into businesses being the technician in the business. So going from that becoming a worker stage, I call it, to supervisor to manager to becoming leadership was that kind of journey from hero to becoming a coach was the one thing that I think had the biggest effect in my business.
Nice. That's really, because I mean, if you're the technician or the worker within it doing that thing you're good at, really that's like freelancing, right? In the ultimate sense. And that's how most of us start, right? We have a skill, either we're employed to do that skill and then we go off on our own slowly. But at some point you have to make that transition to become the leader rather than the person doing all the work.
That's right. And it was the hardest thing for me to let go because, you know, there's always that saying where you're always if you want to get things done right, you have to do it yourself, right?
Yes.
And it was really tough for me when I had to start hiring people because no one could really do 100% of how I like things to be done. So I've kind of learned over the years to accept only 70% and be satisfied with 70% because, you know, they're not, you can't expect everyone to be as invested in your business as you are.
Fair enough. Yeah. How do you get your head around 70%? Like, they're going to be 70% as good as you at this task, but you're going to move on. Is it the fact that you can leverage more people under you, or what's the thinking behind it?
That is exactly it. Because I find that 70% is just a number. It could be 80, it could be, but it's never 100%. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
Is that, you know, as entrepreneurs, we stay up late. We go, you know, we wake up early in the morning. We do what it takes to get things done. You know what I mean? Because our livelihood, the business, and the people that are, you know, depending on us, you know, rely on us to kind of run this business, right? So, you know, we kind of go usually above and beyond. And, you know, it's really hard to sometimes expect that from, you know, certain team members. However, there are a few that will, but they were never going to be as, you know, as crazy as you are. So that's why I always use the word 70%, because when I tell people to start hiring, or when they first hiring somebody, that's the number one thing that they're afraid of, is letting go of actually doing the actual work and transitioning from a worker to either a manager, where you're doing 50-50, you know, 50% of, you know, managing people and 50% of the work, to like true leadership, which you do almost no work. I would say no work, but I would say 95 to 100% of your time should be focused on building leadership within the people in your organization.
I like it. So is this a reason, because looking at the three companies you're running right now, you're a co-founder in each of them. So this idea that hiring somebody, you can't expect them to care about it as much as you do, which totally makes sense because you're the one that has like the, you get the biggest benefit out of the company succeeding. So is this part of the reason why you choose to be a co-founder in at least all your businesses you're running at this point, or is there a different reason for this?
You know, that's kind of where it kind of, the idea was kind of born, or kind of hit me like a brick of wall, is that before these companies were formed, I was trying to take a position in each of these companies. I was either going to be the COO or the CEO or the president, you know, within these companies. And I realized that these are positions within a company that needs full-time or at least a massive amount of time, dedication, and effort in order to run. So there's no way I could spread myself too, like, you know, I would spread myself way too thin. And what would happen to me is that I've tried this, and what would happen to me is that I would dedicate most of my time putting out fires. So if this business had something that's, you know, very urgent, I would go in and deal with it. If that the other business started having something urgent, I would go and deal with it. And it became that cycle where I'm just trying to put out fire, trying to, you know, focus my time on this. And it was not beneficial to growing the business. Hence why I had to find a different way. And that's kind of where I learned about that transition from being a hero to a coach. And a hero really is answering all the questions and helping your team in a very detrimental way. For example, if a team member came up to me and said, hey, how do I do this? I would, in the past, normally just say, oh, you do this X, Y, and Z. This is how you do it. But now what I've been, you know, slowly doing is that before anyone can actually book a meeting with me or have a, you know, a team member to ask me any questions, I get them to have a minimum of at least 1 to 3 solutions that they come up with. Because chances are the three solutions, one of them is going to be the one I probably would have suggested anyways. But what that has in turn for me is that I make them think for themselves. No longer are they going to be relying on me to answer all the, you know, issues, right? Because when I start doing that, I realize that they're not thinking for themselves. They're not growing as individuals, and they're afraid to take chances. And I don't want that to happen. And I don't want to be always have to be there in order for the company to grow. So that's why I'm transitioning to myself into that kind of a leadership slash coach role versus a hero role.
I love that. I love the fact that you make your team come up with three of their own solutions before approaching you. That's awesome. I had the like the honor of seeing Seth Godin last month, I guess it was here. Mm-hmm. And yeah. He said that, like, that was part of his thing, was just like, when somebody comes to you with an idea, or when somebody comes to him with an idea or tells them about his new thing, he's just like, don't just ask me what to do. I demand of you to at least tell me your bad ideas first. So like, that way you don't have to feel like these have to be the best ideas. It just, you have to put in the work, because typically those, what you think are bad ideas, you just need somebody, the leader, to tell you like, no, man, that is right. The right thing to do. Just go do it.
That's right. And yeah, and like says, like, you train them, right? Not train them, but you enable them to think for themselves. And that's huge.
That is huge.
You know, personal growth, you know, and so.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So we've talked about this sort of transition period you've gone through from the hero to the coach. So let's go back even further to before the hero, if there is, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they've sort of realized one of two things, that either they had this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or they found that they just simply could not work for somebody else anymore. So Jeremy, could you take us back to when you sort of discovered this about yourself, and then tell us which side of the fence you see yourself on now?
Oh, I think it was, I don't remember the year. I do remember I was about 16 years old. I worked for a hospital as a data analyst at that time. It was just a summer job. And I would try to implement, I guess, new things using Microsoft Access at that time. It was like a database kind of a programming tool. And it would have to jump through a lot of hurdle. People would just kind of, you know, a lot of politics, like, you know, got really involved in. And the people that worked around me, they would clock in, you know, 9:15, clock out at 4:30. You know, you try to push things and they would just tell you, don't work too hard because you're making the rest of us look bad. So it was that environment of people trying to kind of out-lazy each other, you know what I mean? For the sake of being able to keep a job. And that's what really turned me off of working for somebody and working for a company that didn't really, sort of say, you know, strive to be better.
Right.
So I kind of made a promise to myself that I would never go through that again, and that I would only hire people that are truly passionate about what they're doing and really just want to move forward. I went to school. I did advertising. I even tried to apply for jobs. Unfortunately, I applied to be a creative director at multiple agencies. And coming out of school, I was a little naive. You don't apply to be a creative director. That's like, you know, that's like top dog at different agencies. You know, I was kind of
reach for the silly. Top.
Yeah, exactly, right? And no one returned my phone calls. I waited like 6 weeks, you know, not even an email back, right? So I said, you know what? I'm going to start my own thing. And I did. And we got acquired by a bigger agency 2 years in, 2.5 years in. And then I sold that last year.
Wow. So, nice.
Yeah.
So you started your own advertising firm.
Essentially, marketing. Yeah. Digital marketing, I would
digital
say.
Digital marketing.
Yeah.
Digital marketing is a better term. And so during this, like from 16, having that summer job, then going to school, but already kind of knowing that you didn't want to just work for another company like a hospital or something like that, how supportive was your family during all of this?
Not supportive at all. I mean, they were and they weren't. So I think family and friends always have a doubt. The ones closest to you, I find they're like, you know, like, are you sure you want to do this? You know, it's really tough. You know what I mean? And, but my parents did give me a loan. I did pay them back in about a year and a half time, but they gave me a substantial loan. My girlfriend at the time, a wife now, was super supportive, but you know, most people told me, don't do it because, you know, entrepreneurship is hard. I didn't listen. I just, I said, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And maybe it's fueled by no one wanting to hire me when I came out as a creative director. And it probably fueled from, you know, like the hospital job where people outlazy each other. I just didn't want to be in that kind of environment again.
Right. Would you agree that it is hard?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Roller coaster. Yeah. Anyone that tells you that it's easy is lying to you, or, you know, it's definitely hard.
Yeah.
You know, they, what was that word? I tell people, you know, entrepreneurs work 80 hours a week, so then they don't have to work 40.
So terribly true. All right, Jeremy. So at the beginning, you said your one thing is leadership. Mm-hmm. Now, every business expert talks about this 80-20 rule. Do the 20% that gives you the 80% of the results, do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Jeremy, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
probably not good at is probably some of the minor details. I like big picture, and I don't want to be doing the minor details of things. And I guess the other thing is I still have this trouble of when I see my team members do certain work, there's a certain way I like it to be done. You know what I mean? And it's that me being that worker again. It's like, oh, if it only moved that a pixel left, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. But I have to learn to just kind of step back and not be that person. So it's still a challenge to this very day because I did entrepreneurship as a technician to start off with. I was a designer and, you know, I partially coded and I love creative. I love that kind of stuff. I see things that are like pixel perfect in my mind. So when I see things that are off, I tend to have the tendency to just try to correct people. You know what I mean? I was at the gym yesterday, which was really funny. And I saw they painted the wall black. All right. And there was a minor thing at the bottom right-hand corner where it wasn't painted. And I made a comment, say, hey, why don't you paint here? I got, you know, it's one of those things that when I see things like that, I make a comment. And I think I probably offended the person that was painting it because he was there working out. But, you know, that's me. I just like the finer things. But I just have to learn to kind of hold back a little.
Yeah, probably yes and no, though, right? Like, I mean, you are also the one in charge. And if a certain level of detail or a certain level of like perfection isn't sort of met by employees, then it can slowly just deteriorate over time, right? So I think that eye for detail is necessary, but then you personally have to find a balance between, am I just like nitpicking with this person or is this really the level we need to be at all times?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, it's not about like, my trouble is that I have a tendency to just tell them. Whereas I should be finding a way to make them discover it themselves. Make sense?
Yeah, that does. Yeah, and that's probably a big part of find me, like bring me three solutions.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because then they learn by doing rather than learn by just you telling them what to do every single time. Because then they only learn to just ask.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, I remember listening to Benjamin Pyle. He talked about outsourcing every little small thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what I'm doing now too, right? I'm actually outsourcing every small thing. I have a skill of virtual assistants, team members around the world, and I'm trying to get people focused on, you know, these smaller things that I don't have time to focus on myself.
Yeah.
Which I like to, but I don't, you know, I like to see it. I like the details of it, but I'm trying to get people to really own up to it, you know. And to be accountable.
Yeah, totally. And so when you take this sort of outsourcing to that level and getting employees to do things, how particular of a job sort of description do you give to your employees? Like, do you write things out like in an SOP sort of format? Or is it just kind of get them on the Skype and tell them what to do?
No. So there's two. Yes, definitely there's SOP. And what I actually do is sometimes I will record our conversations with the employee. Or when they're doing the task, I'll ask them to record it, or we'll do it together and we'll record it. And that becomes a video SOP for doing it. Because I find that sometimes we write it down as well, but text SOPs often get, you know, without screenshots, without properly explaining certain things and why we do things. Sometimes you can't write it all down. And sometimes when you talk to someone going through it, you tell them, why am I doing each and this every step? This is important because, and it's hard to write. It's easier to explain because I see it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true because it kind of gives them, it helps teach them like sort of the mindset behind why you're doing this, not just do it because I said so.
Exactly. Yeah. And we just upload it to YouTube, you know, put it on listed channel, you know, and those are all of our SOPs.
I love it. I love it. Okay, let's move to projects. Jeremy. Mm-hmm. So projects is a loose term, but let's talk about something within WP Up. So whether it's a new customer acquisition project or a new project for existing customers, whatever it happens to be, I would love to know what your process is as sort of the person in charge, but with a team under you. What's the process that you go through and whether that's like a written process or just an internal gut process, but what do you go through right now to decide when a new project is worth not just yours, but also your team's time, energy, and resources?
We actually have a pretty interesting process. So all of our projects and suggestions are put into Trello, first of all. And on a weekly basis, we do this thing called the IDS, Identify, Discuss, and Solve. It takes about 20 minutes. everyone throws in ideas, and we usually can only talk about, you know, 2-3 things at every weekly meeting. And we discuss whether or not if it's a core value and it's going and is it contributing to the, you know, the long-term success of our company. If it's not, we just don't do it. And if it is, then we identify what are some potentially the hurdles, what are the resources that we need to make this successful. And then once we define that, identify that, then we solve it. We figure out using, you know, the creative brain juice, so to say, from all the team members, and we try to figure out how do we implement this in a creative way that will work well for our business.
So when you say that everybody gets to add ideas to Trello, is that literally like everyone on the team, like from the first hire, they get to?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to start building leadership within them. The ones that contribute, the ones that post, the ones that bring ideas to the table. I find that it's human. It's something that robots can't do, right? It's human intelligence, human capital. Yeah. And, you know, I'm looking at all this new AI stuff that's happening around the world. And I feel like it's my gut feeling that a lot of automation processes is going to be replaced, you know, whether it's manufacturing or even stuff on the web. So I need to surround my team with people that are thinkers, that are going to go above and beyond to do things that AIs can't possibly do, right? The human element of things. So
yeah, and you like don't seem to have like, I know lots of leaders have that philosophy about their employees and their team, but it's kind of cuts off at a certain level, meaning that, well, employees below this level don't really need that. They just need to do their job. I like how you really throughout the whole conversation are like talking about just empowering your people to get smarter and better and become leaders themselves.
Yeah. I mean, what I'd like to do, like for the ones that are maybe what you consider lower level employees, I guess, I still want them to contribute ideas, because the ones that contribute ideas to the business and it becomes an idea that we implement, they are far more likely to stay in the company because they feel like they made a difference and they make a difference in your company. And the other thing I do really, that I find I may do really well, is that I spend probably 80% of my time really figuring out how to improve the lives of my employees. So I try to get pretty personal and deep with understanding their personal lives and how I can make sure that they're happy in their family and their personal lives, because I find that they become better employees coming into the business when they're happy outside of work.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Is that hard to do, like without crossing certain boundaries sort of thing? Or is it really just if you have that culture within it, everyone just sort of talks, whether you're on Slack or wherever you are?
Yeah, we're everyone's on Slack, but I do video Zoom calls because I want to see the person. And most of my team members are around the world, right? Philippines, yeah. Ukraine, US, Canada, like it's all over, right? So I always want to see face-to-face, see how they're doing, because sometimes the human emotion, like what you see, their movements is different from how they sound on just on voice. So I definitely want to see them. And yeah, I think it's not about being difficult. It's just that you just have to be genuinely interested in your employees' lives. And they may not want to tell you, but if you start telling them about yours, chances are they will open up. And if you listen, right? The most important thing is listen, ask for more, don't overtalk. When they say something, acknowledge the fact that you've heard them, repeat, you know, back what they've kind of said, and just, you know, to give them that feeling that you've really heard, you know, you hear what they're saying, and they'll just talk more. Most people just want to talk if they felt listened to.
Yeah, exactly. And this idea with projects, this IDS, identify, discuss, solve. Mm-hmm. How much of that has to do, how much do the ideas have to do with sort of like new projects always? Or does this IDS also happen with some, it's like a project maybe you implemented 2 months ago, but isn't quite seeing the metrics that you want it to see? Do you kind of keep a focus on like iteration, or is it, okay, let's get rid of that one and let's go to the next ideas?
Oh, no, it's both internal, like ongoing, new, everything. So IDS is meant for people to submit ideas or talk about existing issues that we currently have inside the business. And they are sort of usually by priority, and we can only get to usually about 2 or 3 of them in one meeting. Then you have to wait till the next meeting before we talk about it. Or we set up a separate committee /meeting time, and whoever wants to get involved will discuss that specific issue if it's like urgent, you know.
Fair enough. So it's both past things and new things, but you can only discuss so many because otherwise you'll just spend all your time in meetings.
That's right. And our meetings are not meant to be updates. I was just reading Cameron Harold's Meeting Sucks. Yeah. And I've been a firm believer of traction. That's kind of where ideas kind of came in, you know, the Rockefeller habits, you know, level 10 meetings. And then after reading Cameron Harold's Meeting Sucks, you know, one of the things that we definitely don't do is update people in meetings. I mean, we spend maybe 2 minutes, 5 minutes at most, giving a high level updated company financials, all that kind of stuff. But the meetings that we get together, you know, it's five of us, six of us, seven of us, or when we bring out outside people, you know, is really to leverage the creative and brain trust or brain resource that we have as a team, you know, to really be creative and think of new solutions. Because I find that that's kind of why we get excited, right? Everyone wants to brainstorm ideas and come up with ideas. I like that. Yeah. I get pumped. I get motivated and inspired, right?
And so, you want to motivate and inspire your team to do the same.
That's right, yeah.
I love it. All right, Jeremy, this has been an absolute blast. I want to wrap up on one final question for you. Mm-hmm. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So since 16, you realized this is what you needed to do. You've been at it for some time now. You obviously have huge, big visions and goals of places you want to go. But there seems to be this gap sometimes that we live in as entrepreneurs, because no matter what we accomplish, from the outside, we can look super, super successful. But from ourselves, we never see ourselves as successful, because success is always at sort of the next goal or metric in 3 months. When you hit that revenue goal, you'll be successful. When you stand on that stage in 6 months, you'll be successful. Yet we both know the second before you accomplish that goal, you're going to set five bigger ones into the future.
Yeah.
And I agree, we have to do that. But I would love it, Jeremy, if you could look back to that time at 16 when you sort of realized you wanted to take this path, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses up until today, and just tell me how you feel about all of it until now.
You know, I think over the years, my definition of success have definitely changed. My thinking now is that when we die, the only thing I'll be remembered is how much impact I've made on people and in the world, not how much money I've made or the cars and the houses and the jobs that I've had. So I remember one person said it, and it really rang true to me, is that how many people show up to your funeral really defines the amount of success you have. And I think that's kind of how I live each day now, you know, trying to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs, create a better place to live in, raise kind and courageous kids. I have two of them. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, what I see now. And I think that's maybe potentially the gap, you know, that's kind of missing. Before, it was a lot about chasing money. Don't get me wrong. When I first started, you know, entrepreneurship was very, very much about, you know, getting money, getting financial freedom, getting the time I need to do whatever I want, set my own time. I was sold like that, right? Most entrepreneurs probably, I would say, are sold like that. But as I got into it, I realized there's so much more important things that make me happy than the money itself.
Nice. Beautiful answer. All right, Jeremy, we've got to talk about your businesses in passing, but I think WP Up is something that the listener could really, really value from. So could you please tell the listener more about WP Up and then where they can track you down online?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us at wpup.co, but we help entrepreneurs get their time back so they can literally focus on things that are more important to their business. And we do this by securing, supporting, and manage the website for a very reasonable monthly fee. Unlimited changes for like $100 a month. Simple as that. So
I love it. And you are on Twitter.
I am on Twitter at Mr. Jeremy Choi. So Mr. Jeremy Choi, or through the company is WPUPINC, like WP Inc.
Nice. Excellent. So WPUP.co is the website. At Jeremy Choi is on Twitter, and then WP Up Inc. is the company on Twitter. Talk about Meeting Suck, the book, and also Trello and some IDS, which I'm going to track down. And we will link to all of those in the show notes so that when you're done walking, working out, jogging, whatever it is you're doing right now, those will be there waiting for you. Jeremy, once again, man, thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so openly. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Awesome. Thank you, Johnny.
Jeremy, thank you so much. That was a lot of fun. I hope that you out there listening, I hope that you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. Jeremy's a smart, smart dude. And as I forgot to mention in his intro, he's just recently become a father again as well. Like 6 weeks ago, I think, or 8 weeks ago. I think in the background we could hear a little tiny baby. And I forgot to mention it in the beginning. But he's a leader. He's a golf addict, an entrepreneur, and he's also a father. All right. So this conversation was fun to be part of. And it's always fun for me, like in a different way, but also equally, but to get to go back and listen to it as you listen to it out there. So that's what I did. I went back and I listened to the conversation. Then I went back and I listened again. That second time that I went through the conversation, there was one thing that Jeremy said that I hadn't noticed earlier on, but upon listening back, it just stood out to me. And I'm actually wondering how I missed it. It was that one thing that Jeremy said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But now what I've been, you know, slowly doing is that before anyone can actually book a meeting with me or have a team member to ask me any questions, I get them to have a minimum of at least 1 to 3 solutions that they come up with. Because chances are the 3 solutions, one of them is going to be the one I probably would have suggested anyways. But what that has in turn for me is that I make them think for themselves.
And that's the hack. Jeremy. This is awesome. So for me, I can't speak for you, but I know that I've talked to almost 300 entrepreneurs now. A really hard thing for us as entrepreneurs is the details. And often that comes into that is delegating and managing employees, right? Which is absolutely necessary to scale our businesses beyond ourselves and create something bigger than us. And Jeremy's awesome. He's so into leadership. So I really, really dig this. But this what he's saying right here. So before anybody can ask him a question now, they have to provide 1 to 3 solutions that they would suggest first. So I've always taken this as, this is actually something I learned a long time ago. And I used to be freaked out about sort of managing people. And somebody had given me this advice. He's just like, John, what you do is when somebody comes to you and asks you what they should do, the best thing to do is always this, because it's as empowering as a leader, which is what Jeremy says. And so you need to take this with you. But it was just the question always to that person is, well, what do you think we should do? Because typically when we're approaching someone, we have a feeling, we just want reassurance, right? And so even if you know nothing about, like if it's a developer of your software and you don't know about software, ask them, what do you think we should do? Because Jeremy's absolutely right. It empowers them. It makes them think for themselves and it gets them to feel like they're part of the solution. Plus, you look like this amazing manager or boss, and you are, because you don't need to be an expert in all of these things. That's why you have these employees and these contractors and these team people working for you, because they know their stuff. So next time you're sort of overwhelmed by it or you're not sure what to do when somebody asks you, think back to Jeremy and just remember those simple words. What do you think we should do? And listen, the solution is there. I love it. Jeremy, thank you so very much. I really, really, truly appreciate it. All right. Well, that was fun, wasn't it? It was. It's December. We have a couple of weeks left and there's going to be a week off between sort of the Christmas, New Year sort of thing. There won't be any new episodes, but yeah, we're wrapping it up. We got some cool guests coming your way very shortly. And as always, I'm open to suggestions. If you have somebody, or even I like when people even just ask for a certain industry to be covered. Somebody had reached out to me and is asking for like independent brewers, and I've got 2 of them actually coming. It's kind of a process to get them onto the show, get their shows ready, but they are coming. And so that's pretty cool because I never even thought of that. but it was somebody interested in that industry. So if your industry is not being covered on this show, let me know. Maybe I'm just absently mindedly not thinking of your industry. But yeah, you can email me anytime, john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. And I would, yeah, I'd love to hear your insights. All right. It's been fun. You know that I truly 100% absolutely appreciate you stopping by. Because I do. I do. I really do. All right. It's been fun. Take care of yourself. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.